All right, let's pick up with Revelation 9. I'll read verses 1 through 6, make some quick comments, and then Revelation 9, 7 will be new material. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven fallen under the earth, and there was given to him the key of the pit of the abyss. And he opened the pit of the abyss, and there went up a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth, and power was given them, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was said unto them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only such men as have not the seal of God on their foreheads. And it was given them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when it striketh a man. And in those days men shall seek death, and shall in no wise find it. And they shall see, and shall in no wise find it. And they shall desire to die, and death fleeth from them. We talked about, as we were back there in the first verse, that we have this star falling from heaven. A lot of people think that this is a reference to Satan. That may or may not be true, but it does seem that this is certainly a power, very likely an evil power. And what does this evil power do? It's given the ability to open up the bottomless pit, or the abyss. And what comes out from this abyss or pit? All right, we've got smoke coming out, and we've got locusts coming out. What's the smoke do? All right, it's going to foul the air. It's also going to block the sun. Now, we have here some symbols. We said when you think about light in the Bible, what comes to mind as far as an image? Good, truth, righteousness, Christ, all of those things. And air too. I mean, what happens if all the air is eliminated on earth? We die. So not literally air here, but what kind of, when we think about light and we think about air, we're talking about what kind of life? Not physical life, but we're talking about spiritual life. So we've got these locusts coming out of this pit, this abyss. And that, of course, would refer to Satan and his helpers. And what are they trying to do in the world? They're trying to cloud things. They're trying to make things difficult for people spiritually so that people stay in sin. They don't find the truth. They don't find the light. Now, as we, especially as you look at verse 4, he talks about as these locusts are working on the earth, they should not hurt the grass. Literally grass or something else? Christians. All right, talking about God's people, Christians, the saved. They're not given authority over the grass. And then he goes on to say any green thing. Green, of course, would be the color of life. Neither any tree. We drew a distinction in a previous class about the trees, stronger Christians, grass Christians that may not have grown quite as much, but only men that don't have what? The seal of God. So these locusts, these powers of evil, physical consequences the devil and his forces can inflict on people. And we said sometimes those physical consequences, it wouldn't be supernatural, but through sin, oftentimes, people pick up some things that Christians don't get. Can you think of some examples? How is Satan able to afflict the unsaved with sin? All right, you're going to go out and become intoxicated on the weekend. There could be some consequences from that. Might lose your license, might kill somebody, end up in jail, prison. You can lose an eye, lose an arm, lose a leg. We talked about going out and sleeping around, AIDS, all kinds of STDs. So certainly John is exactly right here. And then he says in verse 5, and it was not given the power to kill them. And in many cases, that's true when it comes to sin. People don't die. But the effects of sin, will those effects sometimes cause people to wish that they were dead?
Yes.
Yeah. And last week, this is where we ended. You think about all the prevention things that we have. We have a suicide hotline prevention. We have all kinds of crisis centers. And a lot of those centers are related to sin, are they not? If people would just live as the Bible describes, they'd avoid a lot of these issues. But people oftentimes want to go their own way, do their own thing, and because of that, they begin to suffer, and they suffer to the point where they just want to die. And that's what John says in Revelation 9:6. In those days, men shall seek death and shall in no wise find it. They shall desire to die, and death is going to flee from them. Still talking about the physical consequences of sin, we now pick up with Revelation 9, verse 7. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared for war. And upon their heads, as it were, crowns like unto gold. And their faces were as men's faces. Now, sticking with what we've said earlier, these locusts, are they literal locusts?
No.
No, they are a symbol, like many of the other things in the book of Revelation, to represent people. In this case, people and activities associated with the kingdom of the devil. And they want to, as we said from verse 4, inflict great pain on the unsaved. And now John says, let me tell you what these locusts are like. He says these locusts were shaped in what kind of way? He says they look like horses. And these horses were prepared for battle. They're prepared for war. And then he says, on the heads of these horses, what was there?
Crowns.
And the crowns were gold, or the crowns were
like gold.
And don't miss the comparison, because that's going to be important in interpreting this. And then we have one other little detail. The faces were as men's faces. Okay, as the faces of human beings. All right, now let's think about some of the imagery here. Horse. When you think about horse, and maybe not so much in our day and time, but, you know, way back when in history, a horse was a symbol of battle, strength, power. You're going to go out, I mean, we've got tanks, and we have, you know, all kinds of great tools today that they didn't have a couple thousand years ago. But when people were thinking about an army, when they were thinking about going to war, a horse would have been a very, very logical symbol. So when we think about Satan, you can think of him and his helpers as a bunch of horses, and they are involved in this spiritual war, this spiritual conflict with Satan. Well, this is consistent with other passages in the New Testament. Jesus, back in Matthew chapter 13, verse 39, he referred to Satan as our enemy. Well, here, John's making that same point. But now he's doing it in a figurative way. The Lord was very open in what he said. We also think about what Peter said, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. Peter said the devil, remember that word? He's like the lion that roars. All right. And the word that he used, Satan is your adversary. So the same kind of idea is being expressed here. Satan is a great enemy. He has a lot of tools at his disposal. And one of his tools would be crowns. Why do you think John said crowns that are like gold?
They weren't physical gold.
All right, you're on the right track. Today, anybody ever find something that they think is gold? I've struck it rich. But they take it in, they get it checked out, what do they have? They've got iron pyrite. They've got fool's gold. Well, that's really what is being said here about the devil. The devil offers sin and evil in various forms, and he says, here it is. And people think, boy, I've got it now. I mean, you know, here's the bottle, or here are the drugs, or here's this, and here's that, and it looks like gold. And people suck it up. But what happens? That party that looks so fun, the next day it doesn't look so fun from a jail cell, does it?
Kind of reminds you of gambling, too.
Well, the same kind of thing. A person thinks, well, hey, we're going to take a weekend and go out to Vegas, and we're going to have a great time. We've got the girls together, we've got the guys together, we're going to go out and do this. And then you can just kind of fill in the blank as far as the bad consequence. But that is exactly right. We might refer to it as the fool's gold of sin. And John knew that Satan and his helpers are the masters of deception when it comes to things like sin. We also think, as far as these gold crowns, is Satan willing to masquerade as an angel of light? 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14. He is. So once again, you know, follow me. I've got a good way, whether it's religious or whether it's sin, and everything's going to be great. And John says, don't be deceived. Steve?
Would this also refer to, like, say, the TV evangelists, get all these people, send money, you'll be blessed, you'll be healed?
Sure. I think that's the same thing. We know the devil's not hesitant to use Scripture. Back in Matthew chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, you have the temptation. The temptations of Jesus. The devil goes back to the Old Testament and cites multiple passages for Jesus. And he can do that through people today too. People can cite Scripture, and the devil, if that's what it takes to go ahead and bring people into his kingdom, he's certainly willing to do that. And you know, you have people trying to fleece folks instead of actually teach them the truth. So it's just one more way we have those crowns of gold. But the stuff that he offers is oftentimes attractive, it's packaged very, very attractively, but it's simply not what's right. Then you have, and this will tie into Steve's point as well, the end of this verse talks about these locusts. They're not only like the war horses, and they're not only, you know, having these crowns that are like gold on the head, but their faces. Their faces are compared to the faces of people. So when we think about Satan and his helpers, he certainly is active. He has all of his helpers that are active as far as demons. But then he also has some helpers from where?
People.
From people. So when we think about the forces that he has, Satan's forces are very, very strong, and we would even say somewhat varied. Whatever sin that we can mention, and we'll pick up some cross-references here, whatever sin we can mention is usually somehow traceable back to at least one person. Let's look at Matthew 3:7 as a cross-reference, and also we'll look at Matthew chapter 13, verse 38. Matthew 3:7, if you'd like to be headed to the third chapter of Matthew. All right, Lois, and then Scott will ask you a little later in the book to pick up with Matthew 13, verse 38. Jesus made a similar point in John 8:44 when he said, "Ye are of your father the devil." Remember that? Talking to people. So there in John 8, Jesus makes this point, but we also see it in Matthew 3, verse 7. Lois, let's have you read that now.
"But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees coming for baptism, he said to them, 'You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come?'"
Okay, John refers to some people as coming from the brood of vipers. You're from the offspring of snakes. Well, if you trace that back, ultimately, who would that be? You're going back to the devil. So John says, you people, the devil is your spiritual father. You are his helpers. And then over here in Matthew 13, 38, Scott.
"Feel of the world, and the good seed is the son of the kingdom. The weeds are the son of the evil one."
Ooh, that's pretty specific, isn't it? Jesus says the sons of who? The evil one, which would be Satan or the devil. So when we think about the faces of men over here in Revelation chapter 9, verse 7, that is exactly right. Satan will use people to afflict folks, especially the unsaved, as we're talking about from Revelation 9, verse 4. Anything? One other quick point there, I guess, that I might point out, and then we'll see if we've got a hand or two, and then pick up with Revelation 9, verse 8. The faces of men. I would not say that these people have made good choices. But when he talks about the faces of men, do you think that also might suggest that these people have some intellect? Yeah, Satan's followers are not completely stupid. Sometimes they have some really, really good ideas. They're bad ideas, spiritually speaking, but as far as when it comes to sin and evil, people can concoct some very, very creative things. And Steve mentioned one good example, and the world is always doing that. And Satan, like I say, just 24/7 is how it works. Anything that you might add or ask before we pick up with verse 8 in Revelation 9? Okay. In the 8th verse, he says, "And they had hair." And notice once again the comparison. You really want to pay attention to comparison words like and as in Revelation and other books. They had hair, as the hair of women. And their teeth was as the teeth of lions. Now remember, this is still a description of Satan and his helpers, and here two things are emphasized. What's the first thing? The devil's helpers are described as having
hair,
but not literally. Hair that was like or as a woman's hair. And then the second major point is they also had teeth, and the teeth are compared to those of a lion. All right, now, it's not completely clear why John describes Satan's helpers as having hair like a woman's hair. I'll give you a couple of what I think are the leading possibilities, the first one being what I think is the least likely interpretation. But when you think about women and long hair, some have suggested, well, you know, biblically women are pictured as being in a role where they are submissive to the husband, and maybe that's the idea here, that Satan's helpers are submissive to him. I don't think that's really the main point, but that certainly would be true. The devil is the leader of the pack when it comes to evil. The better explanation, in my mind, comes from Paul's discussion, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 15, where he talks about hair. We're probably familiar with the passage. Paul uses the word glory in conjunction with hair. In that 15, we'll start with verse 13. "Judge ye in yourselves, is it seemly that a woman pray unto God unveiled? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman have long hair, it's what? It is a
glory
to her." So you see women a lot of times. I mean, women usually like the beauty shop. And, spend a lot of money on hair, and sometimes, you know, they'd be playing with the hair and spend a lot of time on hair, and I'm doing my hair differently. And, you know, women, hair, big thing. Guys, usually less so. But when you think about a woman and hair, if she's going to try to attract folks, she's probably going to start with hair, right? She's going to, you know, put all kinds of, you know, cute things in it and different colors and gold. And, that's just kind of be, you know, the showpiece. Well, when you think about sin and Satan, what's the devil out there doing? Do you think he advertises? He wants to go ahead and make sin as attractive as he can. So in my mind, that's probably going to be the point of emphasis here. As far as we're still talking about sin. So if the devil would not package sin as attractively as he could, it's probably going to be like a woman, you know, that shows up for a date and her hair is all messed up. You know, the guy's probably going to think, well, you know, did you just come from a hurricane? You know, what's wrong with you? You know, he's going to see that hair and think you're just not looking right for the date. So he may have had something else in mind, but to me this seems to be a reasonable explanation. That Satan, when it comes to sin, he packages it in the most seductive way possible. But John says, now let me tell you something. He said, even though sin is packaged like this, when you unwrap the package, what do you find? You find teeth. And teeth that are like a lion. Well, you meet up with a lion's teeth, what's going to happen to you?
They're very destructive.
You're going to get ripped up. So John says, if you go down this road, if you live the life of the unsaved, it might look like you're getting a good deal. Maybe some stuff for free. Maybe some things that you always wanted. But in the end, it's going to be a very unpleasant experience. We've used at various times Hebrews 11, verse 25. Moses was someone who chose God rather than the pleasures of, remember the rest of the verse? Sin for a season. And that's the same way the devil works today. You know, there is that pleasurable sin season. Sin will be fun for a while. It looks good for a while. But when the teeth finally bite into you, then you're thinking, oh boy, what did I get myself into? What have I done? And for a lot of people, that means sitting in a jail cell, or that means that they're, you know, they've lost a job or something else that's very, very unpleasant. So the lion's teeth, they leave no doubt about Satan's aggressive, his angry, his hostile attitude towards mankind, and people do put themselves into a position where they can literally be devoured by the devil. Anything that you want to touch base on before we pick up with Revelation 9, verses 9 and 10, Steve?
Well, I just go back to Jesus talking in Matthew 7. Verse 15 says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ravenous wolves.
Yeah, that would be, once again, I said a couple weeks ago, Revelation, when you look at this book, you really have a lot of material that's stated elsewhere in the New Testament. It's just stated with symbolic language here in Revelation. And that's a perfect example. You know, the sheep's clothing. Well, these people are nice. These people are pleasant. Nothing wrong with these folks. But once you finally have a chance to, you know, get down and see what they're like, then they're like the wolf, and they will tear you up. So that's a great parallel. I'm going to include that. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Oh, okay, let's pick up now with verses 9 and 10, Revelation 9. And they had breastplates, as it were breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots, of many horses rushing to war. And they have tails like unto scorpions and stings. And in their tails is their power to hurt men 5 months. Now verse 9 says Satan's followers, and we're still talking about the locusts introduced at the beginning of the chapter, verses 3 and 7. John says, now they have what else? They have breastplates, something to protect them. And he says these breastplates are like iron, not literally, but you have the comparative word, they're like, they are as iron. When you think about iron, how strong is it? All right, it's going to be a very, very sturdy material. You know, we've seen iron used on ships. We see, you know, cast iron skillets today. I mean, just very, very tough stuff. So if we're still talking about Satan and his helpers, and we are, when it says that they have this breastplate, they've got this protection on them, and it's like iron, what's it say about the devil and his helpers? Going to try to stamp them out? Kill them?
It can be used in two ways. It can be used as something hard and piercing.
Mm-hmm.
That it can pierce something softer. Or it can be hard and...
to resist.
Piercing.
Yes.
From the other way.
That's right. It cuts both ways. To try to stop him is going to be very, very difficult. But at the same time, and he's got all these helpers. You know, if they are attired and or if they're prepared to this degree and you're not willing to live the Christian life, you're going to be crushed. So both directions. You're exactly right. Satan is a very, very powerful force. And in many cases, when we think about this imagery and as we look at our world, the devil sometimes seems to be overpowering. He seems to be invincible. If this is not enough, John then goes on to provide some additional descriptions about his evil empire. He says, what about the wings? All right, the sound of their wings, like the sound of chariots. You know, you see a butterfly, not probably this time of year, but you see a butterfly out there fluttering about. How loud is it?
Not very loud.
Probably not very loud. But you know, if you've got enough butterflies, you've got enough other insects, We hear the chirping at night of various things. Can you imagine the chirping where it sounds like you've got, what would be a good illustration? Chariots running to war, trying to, a freight train. You know, you stand next to a train, or maybe you've got a section of train track where you have three or four trains going by, and they're all going by about 40 or 50 miles an hour. I mean, we say, man, you know, I just got to cover my ears because it's so loud. So John uses this imagery to further impress on us the force of the devil, rushing to war. Satan has a lot of assistance, those many horses, and his helpers never seem to tire when it comes to inflicting pain and agony in others. I want to read this quote to you because I think it does a really, really good job as far as Satan's power and what John's saying. He says, quote, "Think for a moment of the decadence which threatens to devour our societies, how well it defends itself." Now get this. The decadence in our society, how well it defends itself. Is the issue pornography? Well, we've got to protect freedom of speech. Remember, we've got to protect freedom of speech, remember. Is the issue homosexual legislation? Bear in mind now, we have to protect the freedom of the individual, because that's plainly stated in the Constitution. He must be left to do as he pleases, especially if his quote-unquote crime is a victimless crime. Remember the pursuit of happiness and all that. Is the issue abortion, for whatever reason? Well, after all, it is her baby, her life, and her body. Is the issue the ravage of the liquor business? Bear in mind, it is unconstitutional to say what a man can and can't put into his belly. Breastplates of iron, that's what evil wears, and it can only be pierced by the sword of the Spirit. So when we look at our society, we see a lot of the ills in our particular culture, and we think, boy, it just seems like it's impossible to stand up against that. Well, guess what? That information is in the Bible. It's in Revelation 9. God says, when you look at evil, when you see the bad things in your culture, I'm telling you that it looks like these forces have breastplates of iron. So don't be surprised, don't be shocked, don't be discouraged when you see all of these things taking place. Now that is an encouraging message in our world. But I think it's a message that a lot of people haven't come to understand. That God knows about the forces of evil, and he's had this knowledge for a long, long time. Anything that you want to add or ask on this particular point?
Well, it's even in schools, too.
Kids sure.
Try and do anything that has to do with scripture or religious. I mean, they're really trying to cut anything out of school.
Yeah, and when you see what's happening under the bleachers, in the classrooms, kindergartners on up through teachers, I mean, it just looks like many of the schools in our nation are literally lost and out of control. But once again, God says, you've got to realize the devil is very, very good at what he does. He's very, very powerful. But our schools would be a great illustration. Sad, but true. Okay, Satan, we've noted that he's power. He's very powerful. He's tireless in his activities. But the Bible also gives us some insight as far as the other side of things. Can the devil, for the Christian, be resisted? James 4, 7 and 8, resist the devil, and he's going to do what? He's going to flee from you. So even though he has this iron breastplate, if you will, and his helpers are similarly attired and draw nigh to God, he's going to draw nigh to you, James 4, verse 8. But for that to happen, what do we need? Remember Ephesians chapter 6? Paul says, you put on the what of God? The whole armor of God. You think we need the whole armor? Based on what we are reading about the devil in Revelation 9, don't leave a piece of it off. God's given us all the pieces that we need, and if we leave off a piece here or a piece there, or we're not regular about putting it on and keeping it on, Satan's going to find those places that are left open, and he's going to exploit those. And sometimes people say, well, you know, Christianity, I just, you know, really don't need all that stuff, and, you know, I'm going to be fine. Well, the devil's already got you halfway if that is your attitude. An incentive for living the Christian life is found with verse 10, and he says, and they have tails like unto scorpions and stings in their tails, and they've got the power to hurt men for 5 months. Now this information is essentially the same as what we found back in verse 5, and it was given back there in 5, and it was given them that they should not kill them, but they should be tormented 5 months, and the torment was as the torment of a scorpion when it striketh a man. And then in verse 6 he talks about the fact that people wanted to die. Now if you move ahead a little bit in verses 18 and 19 at the end of the chapter, and we'll read these verses as well, John amplifies the thought a little bit. He says, by these three plagues was the third part of man killed. Now, we've identified the third part of man as which part, remember? the spiritual part. We're talking about the physical part of man in the first part of the chapter, but now we turn to the spiritual part at the end of the chapter. By the fire and the smoke and the brimstone which proceeded out of where? Out of the mouths, and that's important. For the power of the horses is where? In their mouths, and it's also in the tails. For their tails are like unto serpents and have heads, and with them they hurt. Now, we change the thing that's inflicting pain. Back here in verses 9 and 10, what's the thing that's hurting people? Scorpions. We've got the locust coming out, and now we've got the scorpions. But as we get down to 18 and 19, not the scorpions, we have the serpents. We've got the serpents. We've got the snakes. If you're going to have the choice of being bitten by a serpent or a scorpion, which would you take? I'm going to take the scorpion because you're probably not going to die from that. But a serpent is going to be, I guess depending on the snake, but here, the serpent is going to be, the deadly thing, whereas the scorpion is just going to inflict a lot of pain. So as you look at these additional verses, coming out of the mouths, when we think about Satan, what would come out of the mouth that would hurt people?
Lies.
All right. A lie.
Deceit.
Could we just use the word teaching to sum up both of those things? We're going to speak a lie. We're going to speak a religious falsehood. So when we think about Satan, a lot of the hurt that he does is through communication. People are given information. Information is sent forth that's false. Well, isn't that true? When we look at our world, don't we have a lot of anti-Christian philosophies that will lead people to destruction? Our world's filled with false religious information. And the devil uses that. And that hurts people. It hurts people sometimes physically, and it certainly hurts people spiritually. We know the gospel is God's power to salvation, Romans 1:16. But when we look at the false teachings that come from the devil, it causes people to get stung, as we see back here in verse 10. They have tails unto scorpions and stings, and their tails the power to hurt men for 5 months. So John pays a lot of attention to scorpion stings. I mentioned last week Sherman had asked a question about scorpions. I said we deal with it a little bit more, and I want to do that now. I went back and actually did some looking. As far as people who have been stung by scorpions, I've never had that experience and hopefully never will. But the people who have undergone that, I'll tell you what some common things are. Some have said that for them it was like a bee sting. Now that seems to be a relatively minor sting from a scorpion, but most of us have been stung by a bee, and usually not a real pleasant experience. I mean, we say, wow, that hurts, and that may or may not last for very long. For others, they've said that a bump will appear, or bumps appear around the sting, and sharp pains. So if you can imagine something that just causes some sharp, some jabbing pains, maybe almost like being jabbed by a knife several times, that will get you thinking about what a scorpion sting could feel like. And then a common problem with people is the throat feels like it's closing. Now, it's bad enough to have pain, but when you feel like your throat's closing, that's bad. And this is a relatively common symptom of a scorpion sting. Others have had it and reported different things, but everybody seems to agree on at least this much. Expect some pain from the experience. People have sometimes compared a scorpion sting to nails being driven into the skin. If you can imagine someone just putting a nail against one of your bones and trying to drive that in, I mean, it's like, ouch. Other people have compared it to someone taking a lit cigarette and just grinding it into the skin and let you feel burn. Well, when John uses the scorpion sting imagery, it's a really, especially if you've been stung, you can appreciate that. But it's a really good way. If you can imagine a cigarette being ground into your hand, a lit cigarette, it's a lot like sin, isn't it? When that person is sitting in the jail cell, when the person is thinking about the individual that killed, the guilt, and the other thing, they're tempted to call the crisis center, they need help, it all goes back to sin. So, John, as we look at the first part of this chapter, he's saying involvement with Satan, involvement with his helpers, involvement in unrighteousness, it's going to lead you to a very, very painful existence in this life and certainly in eternity. Anything that you want to touch base on? Add or ask before we pick up with verses 11 and 12. Virginia?
What about the
5 months? It says 5 months. Sure. Let's think about that. We think about 10 from that study in Bible numerology. What do we say about the number 10?
Completion.
All right, so if you have 10 and you take away half that number, completion goes to incompletion. So when we think about this suffering and you go back to the first part of the chapter,
what is good five and then...
In 4 and 5, uh-huh. And it was said unto them that they should not hurt the grass... you're right, in 5. And it was given to them that they should not what? Kill them. So, a lot of Satan's work in this life. I mean, he wants to destroy people spiritually in eternity. But he also has this second goal. As people go through life as a non-Christian, what else does he want to do? I want to torment you. I mean, it would be bad enough if we said, well, let me just get you into hell. And I'll let you have a great life. But Satan says, I'm not willing to do that. I want to, as you live that non-Christian life, I want to inflict pain. I want to inflict agony. I want to make you suffer in life. And then, when we get to the end, I want to make sure it's increased in an eternal way. So, 5 months, once again, the devil doesn't have the power to destroy us. In that sense, in life, that's ultimately going to be God's power. But he does have the power to make life very, very miserable. And isn't this interesting when we compare this information with the world's view of Christianity? Oh, that Christian stuff, that's a pain. And I would never want to live in that particular way. My life, I'm happy with it. They really don't know what they're saying. They can avoid a lot of those consequences and involvement with Satan if they simply become a Christian and be faithful. So the devil really has skewed and messed up the thinking of a lot of people. But a lot of folks never get it.
Like what you said with the cigarette, though, too. I mean, have you ever seen somebody who's a smoker and they haven't had a cigarette for a while and they get one? You know, they feel, oh, you know, I need this, but I mean, that's.
Yeah.
But then the other end, I mean, it can burn you.
Yeah.
It does, cancer.
Virtually any sin. Gambling is the same thing. I haven't been able to gamble in X number of days, weeks, months, years, and boy, now I get to go to the casino. The same thing is true with the bottle. I really need a drink. I can't wait until I get in the car and start heading home. I can't wait to get home. Can't wait for the party this weekend. And the devil's very, very good at what he does when it comes to that kind of thing. So you're exactly correct. Anybody else? Okay, let's pick up a little more. Looking now at the information in verses 11 and 12. They have over them... as king, the angel of the abyss. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek, the Greek tongue, his name is Apollyon. The locust, the scorpion, is described at the beginning of the chapter, the preceding verses. They have a leader. Now, locusts in the real world, do they really have leaders? See a locust out there, outside, does it have a leader? No. Doesn't have a real leader. So this is one more indication that we're not talking about literal locusts. And in fact, here, John, to make it clear that we're dealing with a spiritual leader, Satan, he describes him by a couple of different names, and the Bible has all kinds of names for the devil, and we'll look at some of those shortly. Here we have some additional names for him. He's the angel of the abyss. We'll see that again in Revelation 20, verses 2 and 3. He's a king. And his name is found in multiple languages. We have the Hebrew name for him, which means destruction. So when we think about Satan and the people that follow him, he has some responsibility for the destruction that they face in this life and certainly in eternity. Then we also have the Greek name for him. That name, of course, would mean something like destroyer, very, very similar to the Hebrew name. We're not sure why John used two different names. One suggestion might be, and I think there's some merit in this, that John's readers may have been bilingual. They may have understood both Hebrew and Greek. So he includes both names. Maybe there was another name for, or another reason for including both names. But this information does remind us that Satan, he is the destroyer. He is the one that wants to create hardships in life. And in contrast to him, what's true about Jesus? Remember John 10? Jesus said, I've come to give people what? Life. And I've come to give you that life abundantly. I've come to help you. But if you want to follow the devil, what are you going to find? The destroyer. Death. Destruction. Pain. Agony. Hurt. Well, of the two, which do you want to choose? I mean, there really is no choice for thinking people. We have a lot of other names for Satan in the scriptures. He's referred to as the tempter. Matthew 4, verse 3. Beelzebub, or the prince of demons. Matthew 12, 24. The evil one, the enemy, the remover of truth, father of lies, the prince of this world, the god of this world. Belial, serpent, the princes of the powers of the air, adversary, the angel of the abyss, dragon, devil, accuser, accuser of God's people, and the deceiver. Now that may not be every name, but that, you know, I think is sufficient to show us that Satan is definitely someone that we do not want to follow. We certainly do not want to be on his side. Okay, a little more information. This verse ends the discussion of the fifth trumpet. Now, if you have that sheet that we passed out, we highlighted for you the meaning of the seven seals, the seven trumpets, and then we're not there yet, but the seven bowls of wrath. And you can kind of go back and see that. We talked about the fact that this fifth trumpet, which John is bringing to a close, talks about the physical sufferings that non-Christians face because of the devil. Then we mentioned it a couple times in class. With the fifth trumpet out of the way, the physical sufferings for the unsaved, the sixth trumpet is going to deal with what? The spiritual consequences, the spiritual sufferings for those who choose not to be in a right relationship with God. So, trumpets 5 and 6 leave no doubt that there is a great spiritual conflict going on in our world, and Satan and his forces do battle with people, especially the unsaved, day after day. Satan and his allies, as we saw from the chapter here, verses 3, 6, and 10 are very powerful. But back there in verse 4, John said if we want to be one of God's people, we can be protected from a lot of the evil things that he's involved with. Verse 12 describes for us the final three trumpets. And let's read that once again. He says, the first woe, that would be the information about the fifth trumpet, the first woe was past. Behold, there came yet two woes hereafter. And we're talking about the trumpets. So he says there are two more trumpets to go. And as he talks about these trumpets, five and especially six and seven, what word does he use? He says, woe. Well, you can say woe to a horse and probably stop him. But that's not spelled the same as the woe here. When you say woe, W-O-E, what's that mean? Trouble. Woe is me. Bad news. Trouble. We are in serious, serious difficulty. And that's what John is saying about those who choose not to be in a right relationship with God. So when John says this first woe is past, the first woe, that is all the information about the locusts and Satan and his helpers, he says that's past. What can't that mean? All right, he's not saying that Satan and his helpers are no longer active. So we would say that it's not past in that sense. But it must be past. If not in that sense, what sense? It's past. If it's still going on, and Satan and his helpers are still working, it must be past in what sense? Well, could be. Anything else? What about his discussion of it? This is past in the sense I've discussed it. You know that this is the truth. So now that we've discussed this, and it is present tense, it is ongoing as far as Satan and his activities, but now that I've finished this discussion, we're now going to turn to what? Trumpets 6 and 7 and see what would be associated with these two items. Now, the word past in verse 12, I think, also shows us another point. We said before that some, as they approach the book of Revelation, they try to say, well, the seals refer to these time periods. The trumpets, they refer to these time periods throughout time. But if that approach were right, how would you square that with his fifth trumpet? John would say, well, this is past. And he was writing 2,000 years ago. So when he says past, I think that's really the only explanation that we're left with. He says, I'm through talking about this, and now let's go ahead and talk about the next two trumpets. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with verse 13? Stan?
Verse 10, where he means Satan and Hebrew and the Greek. There's a lot of universality to this book in totality. Could it be that John was simply pointing out to these people the Greek and the Hebrew were two of the primary groups of people that they would understand, and he was simply saying Satan is universal?
I think that's true as well. When you think about Greek culture, in this day and time, something that people had wanted to spread throughout the world, and it was a dominant culture, I think you have to make that particular point. We do know, as you move ahead a little bit to Revelation 10:11, and they say unto me, thou must prophesy again over many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. That sure sounds like the whole world. So when you think about that passage, plus the information back here as far as Satan, I believe that would be accurate to say that the devil has a universal plan. There's not a place on earth that he wants to leave untouched. This other quick point, and then we'll maybe say a little bit about Revelation 9, verse 13. When John talks about the fifth trumpet, the physical consequences associated with living a life, as far as someone who's not a Christian, and then he gets to the next two trumpets, 6 and 7, and he says, whoa, how bad's it been so far in Revelation 9 for the person who's not lived the Christian life? People want to die. You've got these locusts that look like horses ready for war. They've got breastplates for iron. They're coming after you. The devil has unleashed the forces of hell. I mean, does it sound like it can get any worse? I mean, that sounds like you pretty much hit the bottom. But John, in preparing for these next two trumpets, says, whoa, 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 for the next two. So once again, when we think about living the non-Christian life, the way of the unsaved, John says this is the most foolish decision anybody can ever make. So a very, very practical point for us, but once again, it's a point that a lot of people simply don't understand. All right, trumpet 6, verse 13. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the horns of the golden altar, which is before God. Now, in the first five verses of this chapter, once again, I know we've gone over this several times, but John spoke about how Satan and his helpers, they want to inflict physical problems on people, especially the unsaved, those that don't have the seal of God. And he's talked about the terrible physical consequences of sin, and now John, beginning with verse 13, and going down to the end of the chapter, verse 21. He's going to say, if you do choose to live the life of the unsaved, you're also going to face some spiritual consequences. Now, John says, when this trumpet sounded, what did he hear? He heard a voice. And he said, this voice came from where?
Four angels.
All right. You've got the voice. Four angels. Anything else? Okay. We've got the voice from the horns of the golden altar, which is before God. Have we seen this altar before? Yeah. It's back in Revelation 6. Back in Revelation 6, you may remember that there are some souls, some people who'd been martyred for Christ. And where are they? They're under the altar. And what are they saying? How long? God, we've been killed. God, our lives were taken because we lived for you. And these people that took our lives, when are they going to be punished? Then we turn two chapters over to Revelation chapter 8. And in Revelation 8, we have this altar being pictured once again. And there, that altar is associated with the seventh seal, or the end of time. And John, he talks about in Revelation 8, he says there's an offering that's made on this altar. And that picture of the altar in Revelation 8, you can go back and see about verses 1 through 5. He talks about how there the unsaved are going to be condemned at the end of time, especially the unsaved who have persecuted God's people. And here he picks up with this same point. The prayers that were being uttered as far as the people who had been persecuted for their faith, John says, okay, people are going to face some spiritual consequences for that. Now, you can kind of begin to, I think, see the connection. It's one thing to live the non-Christian life. But what about the person, you know, that's going to have some impact on the person's, on the third part of, you know, a person's life, the spiritual part. But what about the kind of person that lives a non-Christian life to the point where they persecute God's people? Have you stepped things up a little bit when it comes to sin? It's bad enough to go out and sleep around. It's bad enough to do drugs. It's bad enough to go out and gamble your money. You know, you can pick whatever vice you want. But when you step it up and you say, we're going to beat up God's people, we're going to verbally abuse them, what have you done now? You've upped the ante with God, haven't you? You've now said, in addition to my personal sin, I'm going to go after you. Or I'm going to go after you. And I'm going to go after you. And John, as he begins to talk about things as far as this sixth trumpet, that's where he starts to head. So we'll have to pick up more.